Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness. The Windy City Queercast, show number 442. I'm Amy Matheny, and hello, everybody. We are into fall. We are barreling into Thanksgiving, which I usually celebrate in a very unusual way. I am usually not eating turkey on Thanksgiving. What am I doing? Well, maybe I'll just leave you to ponder that, but I'll release some tidbits here and there. But today, what I'm excited about is we have been following a story with Lee Reinhart, who is a former service member who has been working with great devotion over the past 10 years of the life of Don't Ask, Don't Tell to serve openly in the military as a proud gay man. And we have been following his story since he left the service and has been trying to get back in and be reinstated. And it's been a really interesting story, I hope you think. And now we have the final chapter in the story, as when last we spoke with him, he was having his physical and some final paperwork and a couple of hurdles came about. And did he get reinstated? What did that look like? And much, much more as we finish up this really personal story of looking through one individual's experience to kind of shed light on what it might be like for many gay and lesbian men and women who are current or former service members. So very interesting show today. I'm excited to bring it full circle. Also, Richard Knight Jr., the movies are heating up in the upcoming weeks. We got the new inspired by Shakespeare film Anonymous, the new film that has been an indie darling, and of course the big juggernaut Clint Eastwood, J. Edgar, all in upcoming weeks from Richard Knight Jr., who is hot on the scene. And I hope many of you are enjoying the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival Reeling, which is happening here in Chicago. If you're just hearing this podcast, definitely check out Reeling's webpage and go and see some gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender queer films, because they're right here in our backyard. Short films, long films, documentaries from around the world, from filmed in Chicago. A little something for everybody going on every day for another week. So enjoy that, because Richard is up to his eyeballs seeing some great, great films. And then Kirk Williamson and I bring you some news. There's so much going on, more continuing in some big court cases and the passing of some pioneers, all in our news. So, wow, it's exciting November. Gobble, gobble.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. New IRS 990 forms reveal that Chick-fil-A donated nearly $2 million to anti-gay groups in 2009 alone. 2 years ago, Chick-fil-A's charitable arm, WinShape, gave to such organizations as Exodus International, Focus on the Family, Eagle Forum, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and the Family Research Council.
In Virginia, conservative independent House of Delegates candidate Linda Wall has admitted having an affair with a female student when Wall was a junior high gym instructor in the 70s, but that she's now changed. Since the student was a minor, Wall can still be prosecuted if the other woman ever comes forward.
In California, lesbian Rebecca Arellano was crowned the homecoming king at San Diego's Patrick Henry High School. Her girlfriend, Haley Adams, was elected homecoming queen, making them the first lesbian homecoming couple in the United States.
The Department of Defense has made a list of 14 benefits that same-sex partners of service members can now get. The department made the list as same-sex couples filed a lawsuit demanding benefits that the Defense of Marriage Act have made inaccessible. Among the 14 benefits are casualty notification, wounded warrior designated caregiver, and survivor benefits for retirees.
In New Jersey, prosecutors relented and gave defense attorneys the name of the man who had at least one intimate rendezvous with Rutgers University student Tyler Clementi. Suspect Darun Ravi, attorney Stephen Altman, and an investigator were allowed to know the man's name. However, they may not reveal it to anyone. Ravi, 19, faces 15 charges, including invasion of privacy, in a webcam spying case involving Clementi, who committed suicide last year after the encounter was made public.
The San Diego Veterans Day Parade will include openly LGBT service members, veterans, and their families for the first time. The parade is November 11th.
In Missouri, United States District Judge Nanette Lowry heard arguments October 27th on whether the Camdenton School District should be stopped from using internet filtering software that has prevented access to some LGBT websites. The school system is first to be sued under a national campaign by the ACLU and Yale Law School that aims to improve access to such websites.
Marriage equality foe, physician, and North Carolina State Senator James Forrester has died at the age of 74. Forrester sponsored a constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage.
In Texas, wounded lesbian Marine veteran Esther Garrity, 28, said that a nurse practitioner subjected her to an anti-gay tirade. The nurse practitioner held her for a three-hour session, repeatedly citing the Bible and telling her she was living in darkness. Garrity has filed a complaint against the nurse, the VA Medical Center, and the Texas Board of Nursing.
Government attorneys have dropped charges against Mennonite missionary Timothy Timo Miller, who allegedly helped in the kidnapping of a young girl in a high-profile custody case. Miller was charged regarding the international kidnapping of Isabella Ruth Miller Jenkins, who is in the center of a child custody battle between former partners Lisa Miller and Janet Jenkins. However, he has agreed to help with the investigation of the abduction. Isabella has been missing since 2009.
In Ohio, felony charges have been filed in an attack on a gay student that was videotaped and posted online. The victim's mother had called for hate crime charges against 15-year-old attacker Levi Saber. The victim, identified as Zachary Houston, is getting support from more than 30,000 people who have signed a Change.org petition asking Union Scioto High School and the school district to adopt anti-discrimination and anti-bullying policies.
A.J. Laurent, a pioneer in the gay rights movement and a founder of the Advocate newspaper, died in Los Angeles on October 26 after a long illness at the age of 70. Laurent helped start the Los Angeles Advocate in 1967.
In world news, in Ireland, David Norris has conceded defeat in his country's presidential race. Norris led polls early, then dropped out of the race because of a scandal, and finally re-entered. Had Norris won, he would have been the world's first openly gay president.
In Wales, Old Red Cliffian rugby team captain Jed Hooper, age 22, has announced he's gay. He came out after a boyfriend said he couldn't date a closeted man. Hooper's announcement came after gay rugby star 37-year-old Gareth Thomas announced his retirement.
In Denmark, gay rights pioneer Axel Axgill has died at the age of 96. Axgill co-founded LGBT Denmark in 1948, making it one of the oldest gay rights groups in Europe. In 1989, he and his partner were among 11 couples to exchange vows as Denmark became the first country to allow gays to enter civil unions.
In Malaysia, authorities ordered LGBT rights advocates to cancel an annual arts festival that aims to fight discrimination. The Sexual Independence Festival, held in Kuala Lumpur since 2008, was supposed to start November 9th and featured the theme Queer Without Fear. However, after Deputy Prime Minister criticized it and various protest plans were revealed, police demanded that organizers cancel the event.
In entertainment news, out comedian Mario Cantone is married. Cantone wed longtime partner Jerry Dixon. The couple walked down the aisle to the Rufus song, In Love We Grow.
The 1990s show In Living Color will return to Fox for two special half-hour episodes next spring. It will feature musical performances and a new cast. The original series had such future stars as Jim Carrey, Jamie Foxx, and Damon Wayans. Jennifer Lopez and Carrie Ann Anabia were members of the Fly Girls.
Legendary actress and singer Doris Day will receive this year's Career Achievement Award from the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. Among her films are 1959's Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson, 1962's That Touch of Mink, and the 1956 Alfred Hitchcock thriller The Man Who Knew Too Much. Day will be the first woman honored since 1999.
It's been a wicked good run. The musical Wicked celebrated its 8th anniversary on Broadway in October with many events and fundraising opportunities, including the National School Climate Center's Bully Bus program during National Bully Prevention Month of October.
FX has renewed Brad Falchuk and Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story for a second season. The series is the network's number one premiere in the 18 to 49 demographic. The show stars Dylan McDermott, Jessica Lange, Connie Britton, and openly gay actor Zachary Quinto.
There will be another Amy Winehouse album. Island Records will release a posthumous collection, Lioness, Hidden Treasures, with 12 previously unreleased songs, including the brand new song Between the Cheats, a slower version of her hit Valerie, and a cover of the Leon Russell song A Song for You. The album will be Winehouse's third release following Frank and Back to Black.
In observation of November being National Homeless Awareness Month, the show In the Life looks at the plight of LGBT youth dealing with homelessness. The episode features Cyndi Lauper's True Colors residence, the first permanent affordable housing to be offered to LGBT at-risk youth in New York City. The number of homeless youth in the United States may be as high as 3 million, with 40% identifying as LGBT.
H&M will release a clothes collection inspired by the girl with the dragon tattoo's rebellious character, Lizbeth Salander. Trish Somerville, who created Salander's outfits in David Fincher's upcoming U.S. film, is designing the collection. The clothes will debut December 14th, while the movie starring Rooney Mara and Daniel Craig will be out December 21st.
Madonna will launch a second lifestyle brand called Truth or Dare next year, aimed at women 27 to 50. The first collection, Material Girl, focused on teenage girls and young women.
Chad Hodge, the gay writer of the upcoming HBO biopic on Anita Bryant, met with her recently and is supposedly the first gay man she has been interviewed by in 33 years. Hodge executive produced the recently canceled TV show The Playboy Club. Bryant, now 71, is an entertainer who fought gay rights in the 1970s.
Lady Gaga will sit down with ABC reporter Katie Couric November 24th for a Very Gaga Thanksgiving. The special promises an intimate look at the singer, who will perform 8 songs.
The daytime serial Days of Our Lives will reveal another gay character. Will Horton, played by Chandler Massey, will come out on the show, joining the character Sonny, portrayed by Freddie Smith.
And host Conan O'Brien officiated a same-sex wedding when he returned to New York City recently. He made history by officiating the wedding of longtime costume designer Scott Kronick and his partner on the stage of the Beacon Theater in what might have been the first ever on-air same-sex wedding. Bravo TV exec Andy Cohen walked Kronick down the aisle. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. With mega blockbuster films like 2012, The Day After Tomorrow, Independence Day, etc. on his resume, the idea of outrider director Roland Emmerich using a literary figure like William Shakespeare as the basis for one of his movies is akin to Rodney Dangerfield yelling Shakespeare for everyone in the 80s frat comedy Back to School. And as it turns out, that's exactly the result that the well-intentioned but misguided Emmerich has achieved with Anonymous. The movie poses the question, was Shakespeare a fraud, that Emmerich's regular movie-going audience, the great unwashed masses who have made his movie behemoths billion-dollar winners, might only not be particularly interested in answering, but more to the point, might not have a clue about. Let's see, Shakespeare was whatever. Though this assessment certainly sounds more than a tad jaundiced and cynical, I can assure you that the cacophony that ensues as Emmerich's movie dances around this sort of tantalizing idea won't likely satisfy those that are in the dark about our greatest playwright, nor those that are not. As I sat there watching Emmerich's huge budget lavishly expended on the eye-popping sets and costumes, classy cast, and ever more expensive sequences, I found myself lost in the intricate plot that had something to do with a battle over Queen Elizabeth's successor, an excessive amount of court intrigue, and the idea that Shakespeare's plays were maybe too dangerous or distracting or whatever. The film suggests that Rhys Ifans, as the effete Lord Van Devere, is the real author and labels Shakespeare himself as a drunken, womanizing opportunist cashing in. The movie does raise some intriguing questions, but it's so densely plotted. Have you got that part? That you finally throw your hands up and just stare at the beautiful scenery, enjoy the over-the-top acting from the pedigreed cast, the beautiful boys, and stand in awe at the wads of cash necessary to pull together this bombastic claptrap. Anonymous, as it turns out, is an apt title for this entertaining nonsense, as that's likely to be the swift fate of Emmerich's Edsel of a movie. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Hey, this is Cheyenne Jackson, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 8th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Court Theater proudly presents a legendary 10-year account of the Trojan War, The Iliad. This one-man adaptation was created by Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare of TV's True Blood, an epic poem that takes a look at the human cost of war. Get your tickets now by visiting courttheater.org. The Iliad is playing now through December 11th at Court Theater, 5535 South Ellis Avenue.
The Merce Cunningham Dance Company makes its final appearances at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance on November 18th and 19th at 8 o'clock. Don't miss the final opportunity to see this world-renowned company in Chicago before it disbands forever. For ticket information, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Murder for Two is a killer musical that delivers fun to die for, says the Chicago Sun-Times. One actor investigates a crime, the other plays all 13 suspects, and both play the piano. For tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com/murder. Now through November 27th, save $5 for any Wednesday or Thursday performance when you use the promo code SUSPENSE. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Our gay eyes, they are crying from the words used as weapons of hate. Our gay minds, they are reeling the tone of the public debate. To have and to hold till death do us part. Hey, what part of justice for all don't you understand? I said, what part of justice for all don't you understand?
Well, folks, since 1993, stories have been covering Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We have been on the Queercast covering what is now a three-part story following a particular service member. Back in May, we introduced you to Operations Specialist Second Class in the Navy and Radar Man Second Class in the Coast Guard, Lee Reinhart. And we started his story as kind of a microcosm of what men and women who are once serving in the military might be facing when the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell seemed quite evident that it might happen. And then we talked to Lee a few weeks ago after the repeal, and he had been really working a lot over the past year to get himself ready for that moment. We talked about him going through the last few efforts to reinstate. And we was kind of a cliffhanger, folks. We didn't know what was going to happen. He had had his physical, but there was another delay in which we didn't know how that was going to result. So we're wrapping this story up, folks, and I'm happy to say it has a good ending and probably still continues to be great insight for us into a lot of questions many of you or many people you know who are connected with the military may still have, as I think we'll be talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell for many years to come as they continue to clean up what has been more than a decade and a half of discrimination against gay and lesbian service members. So, Lee, we are here. We have arrived. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you for so much for being kind of a little beacon of a very personal story for us here on the Queercast. Now, when last we spoke, you had had your physical, and then you knew that there was still a little more delay. What was the delay that you were waiting on after your physical?
I think a lot of the delay was that because we were unsure if I would pass the physical,
right?
That my recruiter held off on some of the paperwork that we could have possibly done before that, which is understandable on his part. He didn't want to put a lot of effort into it. If I had failed the physical, then there would be extra hurdles we'd have to go through first.
Right.
So once the physical part of it was done, then we had to really crack down on getting the paperwork. But the most important part I think he was really working on is making, because I had been out for so long, mm-hmm. the Navy could have technically taken me down from an E5 to an E3.
Right.
And that was, he was trying to do whatever he could to save his highest possible rank. And we were shooting for an E4 at least. And he was putting together basically my resume the best he could. Mm-hmm. On putting it together, calling. We had to call every employer that I've worked for since 2002.
Wow.
And each of those employers had to fill out a resume for me.
Wow.
Now, what is, for
those of us who are just lay people, why do you want a different ranking over another ranking?
Well, E5 is obviously a higher number than E3. It's also into the petty officer status, which...
Okay.
For me, E3 is not. E4, you begin to go into petty officer status, which, you know, there is obviously higher pay as you move up each rank.
Okay.
But for me personally, it was because I was going into the reserve component, that wasn't going to necessarily deter me from joining or not. I was probably going to join even if it was going to be an E3 because it was a personal thing and rewarding thing just to get back in.
Right.
But he was doing whatever he could to make that a possibility to go in as high as we could.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? What was the, after you filed all the paperwork, after the physical, what was, and he gathered all the information of all your employers over these past years, what was the result?
Well, to add to that, during that process, I don't think I've mentioned this to you, Amy, is during that process, because I thought I was going so slow, I tracked down my old Navy captain who I served with. And I tracked him down mm-hmm. in his civilian job. He retired from the Navy after 37 years last year.
And this was the officer who knew that you were out, who treated you equally with all of the other service members, correct?
There is a correction to that story as well. There's a twist. I always assumed, because I was out in the Navy the last 2 years, I was completely out of my ship. My entire, you know, I always thought my entire command knew because I had came out to the third guy in command. And then from everyone from him on down, I never kept it a secret.
Right.
So when I was able to track down my old captain, who's now a vice admiral, we talked about this. And he said, Lee, I never knew. I never knew the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And he says, I know this is a great twist, but I'm just amazed at this story because I'm so grateful I never said, I always assumed he knew, and I always said my command knew. And he says, I never knew, and you know what, Lee? I'm glad they did not bring this to me because under the law, I probably would have had to discharge you, and I would have been very upset about that.
Mm.
He says, I am so glad I did not know this.
Oh, wow.
But the cool thing is him knowing that, and within 24 hours later, still wrote a letter of recommendation for me on my behalf as a vice admiral.
Right.
It just made it even more rewarding. And we talked for 45 minutes. We talked about all these different things that happened on the ship while he was in command, and what a great time. And a personal feeling was, he goes, when you left me a message, I knew exactly who you were, because you might not remember this, but you wrote me a letter the day I left the command of the ship, and I still have that letter that you wrote me personally, Petty Officer Reinhardt.
Aww.
And the very next day, Amy, he sent me a copy of that letter. He scanned it and sent it to me. I mean, I'm sure there's many things that he's kept in his 37 years of Navy career.
Yeah.
But for him to keep a letter that someone written him that was only under his command for 2 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, that was really awesome. So,
moving.
I don't want to take anything away from my recruiter and all his hard work for trying to get me a high rank no matter what.
Right.
But I really think having a letter from a vice admiral of the United States Navy probably sealed the deal for me.
Yes.
And I got to keep my E5 status.
Wow. Congratulations. They're super, super happy resolution to this. This is amazing.
That is sometimes highly unheard of, to be out 9 years and to go right back in as you left.
Wow. Well, obviously, I would imagine that the military knows that eyes are on these first cases like you. You're really setting a precedent of professionalism and, and just all that goes with it. I guess the integrity of each of you as military personnel, each of you as service members. And as you said, having this vice admiral speak so highly of you, which I'm sure he did in his recommendation. And obviously you were an indelible impression in his memory, just goes to show that people are based on their conduct, and their character and not on what someone feels about their sexuality, which is the way it should be, because this is an error on the military's part, not an error on active service members who are really doing their job to the full letter of the law.
It was amazing. It was a blessing. It really was. I was really honored. It was funny. I had to go back, and once he told me he didn't know, it's like, okay, I reviewed everything I have said in the last 9 years and made sure, and I have on my Facebook one of my other officers, a little bit lower than the captain, he was a chief warrant officer, and I went back to him and I said, I just want to clarify, you did know, right, when I served under you? And he goes, Lee, don't you remember asking me to a gay pride parade in San Diego 1 year? I'm like, okay. At least you knew. So there were plenty of officers that knew, and any one of them could have discharged me, and they chose not to. So it's still very important that it's out there that I was able to serve openly. And I saw one news report on ABC in Chicago this week that didn't made it sound like I wasn't out in the Navy, and it's like that's not the case. I was completely out my last 2 years in the Navy. Yeah. It just so happened the captain was not aware or chose not to be aware, but it didn't matter. I mean, for him to do what he did for me within 24 hours of us having a conversation was an awesome thing. I'll always be grateful for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's changing the course of what this new history is going to look like having service members come back into active duty or reserve duty. Now, are you going into the reserves? What is the end goal for you here? What has been the goal for you if it all goes swimmingly well, which it seems to be?
It is reserves. You never close doors. I don't want to ever close the door. But if we were discussing it as me going back in as an E3, it'd be a lot harder for me to even consider active duty because of there's a lot of limitations. You have to move up in rank for a certain amount of time, the way I understand it. Mm-hmm. And that would have been really hard for me to catch up.
right.
if I would have had been in as an E3 in the reserve component. Currently, active duty Navy isn't taking prior service anyway, okay. so there's no chance to return to active duty. Now being in the reserve, I love what I'm doing now. I wouldn't change that. But now that I have been put into the military as an E5, the Navy Reserves, that opens up a lot of other opportunities for me down the road if I choose to do so.
Mm.
Because if I choose to go back, first of all, the Navy would have to open it up, you know, bring it back and allow prior service to come back.
Right.
And that could happen whenever they want. But this definitely opens up more doors and more opportunities for me coming back as an E5 versus an E3.
Mm. So, I mean, really, there's a lot of people that are critical in this process as we look at your story to be a barometer or helpful guide for other people who may be in a similar position to you. And obviously establishing a great relationship with a recruiter. These recruiters are really having to go to bat and work through new hurdles and obstacles, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I give him all the credit in the world. This is, you know, this was a lot of time consuming. Mm-hmm. This was not a normal recruitment. And he had a lot of eyes watching him, and that shows by the people that showed up
mm-hmm.
at the ceremony to make sure everything went smoothly, you know, especially when the Navy got wind of all the media's attention to this case.
Mm-hmm.
They even sent the public relations person and the highest ranking, the commanding officer that's in charge of entire recruiting, the way I understand it, in that region was present as well.
Wow. So you're talking about on Monday, October 24th, there was a ceremony. Tell us about that ceremony for you.
It was a great day. All I would have changed is a little bit more sleep and a little bit more rehearsal on my speech. That's pretty much all I would change to that day. It was a great day. The best part was my family and my grandmother were able to attend, and my sister brought two of my nieces, my young nieces, up for it. And I would say probably maybe 30, 35 people showed. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Members of American Veterans for Equal Rights out of Chicago attended, as well as representatives, people from Equality Illinois and the Human Rights Campaign. So basically all the different people that I've had connections with and worked with on this issue throughout the years, a lot of them were able to attend.
Mm.
And then I had the honor of having Congressman Mike Quigley swear me in. So
it was
a great day. I couldn't have had it any other way. And I was very grateful for the attention that it got. Not just, I think, Amy, the most important thing I want out of it is there was two points I really wanted out of that ceremony. For one, I wanted a place where my family could see it and be part of it so they understood how important it was to me. And then I wanted my nieces there really bad because I want when they grow up, you know, when they're in high school years from now, learning about this in the history books, that they'll know that their uncle had a small part in it, you know, had a part in repealing this law. Yeah. And then I wanted to make sure at the end I asked all veterans, both currently serving and those that are no longer serving, to come up and stand behind me because I thought it was important to acknowledge them and to acknowledge, you know, I have an opportunity to go back and serve. There's many people that stood behind me that doesn't have that opportunity because maybe they're too old now
mm-hmm.
or they've moved on to their civilian lives and they can't give those things up.
Right.
But they really wanted to serve, but because of this, they weren't allowed. So I believe I have a duty to make sure I serve my time out in honor of those people. And so
yeah.
That was really important for me that I stressed that
yeah.
the ceremony. And I'm fortunate the media still wants to be talking about this, and I do it, you know. Yeah, it feels good. Don't get me wrong. It feels really great. I worked really hard on this, and I'm really happy the outcome. I'm really blessed. For many years, I didn't know if I would have the opportunity to serve myself, but I knew it was the right thing to continue to do
yeah.
and to continue to fight for others.
Yeah.
So having to have the opportunity myself is even more wrathful. But when the press keeps talking and wants to talk about it, I think it's important because they need to see that there are those of us that, now that this is over, that we really want to go back in.
Right.
And we are trying.
Right.
So
I mean, it's a powerful witness, you know, as you said, to kind of stand up and be in downtown Chicago and out, you know, out of doors and with all these various people who are all working for amazing civil rights and gay and lesbian rights, and our advocates all standing there with you, as well as, you know, military servicemen and women joining you. So I think it's amazing. And it's amazing now, too. I mean, I think one of the reasons that the media, and I'm obviously not mainstream media, I'm obviously the gay media, but... You know,
people
people listen, but the amazing thing is that, you know, stories just continue to come out, you know. I mean, just, you know, just this week, the Service Members Legal Defense Network, I mean, I think they're really keeping this story right on the forefront, and they're, you know, they're now challenging the constitutionality of DOMA. Yep. And other statutes that are preventing equal benefits and family support. You know, now you have all of this back money that, you know, would have been money that you would have earned, you or, you know, you and a spouse, and you meaning the general you. You know, and I think that's why this is going to stay in the news for a while, because there is some sort of, you know, money owed, or, you know, how we deal with retirement and other benefits that many servicemen and women should have earned or acquired, or how we reinstate even that. So,
and there's also, we also get our, you know, keep in mind with our trans brothers and sisters as well, that
right.
they continue to want to serve. They still don't have that opportunity. So we want to be mindful of that as well, that there are those trans, our trans community that want to serve, continue to serve too. So
yeah.
We're not done. We're truly
yeah.
not done. And living now here in Ohio and working with Equality Ohio, we're way behind the curve here in Ohio, and we have lots of work to do to advance in equality. Yeah. So...
So what
it's
is
not
next?
Over.
Well, what is next for you? I mean, do you keep fighting for this cause for others? Do you? What does it mean now that you're an E5 and in the reserves? I mean, what is next? What are the next doors you're walking through or continuing to walk through?
Well, I'll begin my monthly serve. You know, my monthly weekend, 2 weeks a year, and then if I'm called to active duty, I'll definitely go. That's the requirement. But in my day-to-day job as a community organizer with Equality Ohio, we, like I stated earlier, we're working, you know, here in Ohio, a person can be fired for being gay or perceived to be gay. So we don't even have equal housing, equal employment protections here in Ohio. So mm-hmm. we're working on that. So someone asked me earlier this week, Amy, that Don't Ask, Don't Tell obviously sparked the activism in you, and mm-hmm. it did. And, and continue to fight and hopefully offer my services and whatever talents I've accumulated over the years working with Don't Ask, Don't Tell to help other organizations and other issues that I feel appropriate. And definitely here in Ohio, we definitely need to activate people and get people motivated. And, you know, a lot of the LGBT community here in Ohio are not aware necessarily that they could be fired for simply being gay. So mm-hmm. it's bringing awareness to that. We're working on safe schools bill here in mm-hmm. Ohio, mm-hmm. our anti-bullying bills. Just this week, a 15-year-old boy was beaten up at school here in Ohio. Mm. So we're working on those. So I'll move on. I'll march forward and, you know, making sure that we work towards full equality.
Yeah.
I'll give it my all. And then,
yeah.
So,
well, it seems like that's what you've been doing. You know, you've been you're fighting on the front lines here for equal rights, and you've been doing that valiantly, even after, you know, leaving the military. So
couldn't have done it alone. And I could never have done it alone. And so many people had a role in helping me get to where I was and to making it a better place for all of us. So, I'm grateful for all those people, and I'm honored that a lot of those people were able to share that moment with me. So that was a really special moment. So, and that was one of the biggest reasons why I wanted it to be in Chicago at the time, because the majority of those people were there. And I knew, you know, if I had it here in Ohio, that unfortunately my family might not be able to make it, or a lot of those people that I worked with directly on that issue would
yeah.
be able to attend. So they need to know that I'm very grateful for that, and I hope my service from this day forward will honor them for what they have done.
Well, you have honored us with telling your story, and there's nothing more powerful that one can do is be transparent about their life and share. You've given advice to people and really set a model of conduct and character that is extraordinary, and we just appreciate you sharing that story with us here on the Queercast over the past 6 months. Lee Reinhardt, I know, would say that the Service Members Legal Defense Network is a great national organization, that if this story is connects with you or is a part of your story in any way, shape, or form, or someone that you love, you know, they are a great resource right on the front lines of all that's going on since before and after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we will link their website again, sldn.org, on our website. And Lee, we just hope you'll continue to be a friend and contributor to the Queercast from time to time. And we just look so forward to hearing what's to come for you in 2012. It looks like it's going to be a bright year.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you're having a great week. I hope you'll get out and see some movies, enjoy some theater, and keep an eye to what's going on in GLBT news and in our world. Coming up in our next show, Mitchell Fain and I are hitting the town. We're doing a little going back to the 80s, which we like to do all the time. We just call that Thursday. And we are going to be bringing you a show from a show, because we haven't done that in a while. So Mitchell Fain with me on the next Queercast. And we're still on Deb Pierce baby countdown. She's due in like 12 days. Wow. Tick tock, tick tock. November. It's a big month. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now. Don't you understand?